Welcome to Recurring Nightmares, episode 60. We hit the big 6-0.
Shit.
I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And on this month's episode, I picked out a couple of like dystopian political thriller type movies. We'll try to figure out what these are. But first, as always, we talk about what we've seen in the last month. Chris, I think you might have a record. I know you're not going to talk about them all, but you've been busy. I've been seeing I'm like, damn, he's at the theater every weekend.
I went to a concert mid-March on a Wednesday, and then I was like, and I took off the Thursday after it because like I didn't really want to go in. So then I was like, oh, if I took off Thursday, I might as well take off a Friday. And then I went to the movies 4 straight days. But, I'm not going to talk about all of them, but I'll talk about a few of the ones that I went to. And I'll kick off with Mickey 17, Bong Joon-ho's latest film. He's the guy behind Snowpiercer and Parasite. I think those are probably the ones that most people know him from.
We reviewed Memories of Murder by him.
Oh, yes. So he's been featured on here as well.
Yeah.
But I think like Snowpiercer is probably his big Western push in. Okja was something that hit Netflix. And then Parasite was, you know, Oscar. Was it the winner or?
Yeah, it won.
Definitely. Yeah, so Oscar winning director there. This is his latest film, Mickey 17. It is based on a novel called Mickey 7. Stars Robert Pattinson, Steve Yeun, Mark Ruffalo. Good cast. If you've seen the trailers, it kind of paints it as. And, you know, these guys have gone out on a space journey and Mickey has taken the job of an expendable. And basically what an expendable is and it's in the title, they are expendable. They will clone you and bring you back. There's rules around cloning in this universe. Like only one clone of a person can exist at the same time. So you have to die first before they can bring a second version of Mickey in. And what kind of happens is they assume Mickey 17 dies and they bring in a new Mickey and then there's two of them. The trailers though kind of paint it out as like you're going to watch this dude die like horrible deaths over again. That is not the film. That is like the first 5 minutes.
Oh, weird.
It is really Mickey 17 existing on this ship, on this colonizing, you know, they're colonizing this planet. And the political unrest that is happening on it as he kind of sets off a revolution within within the ship. Mark Ruffalo plays, he basically plays Donald Trump.
Yeah, I heard.
Yeah, it's just like an idiot right-wing politician. He's like a mix of like Donald Trump and Elon Musk. Cause like, it's a dude that is like, I am so rich, man, that I'm going to go to space. Like, as so basically like he leaves Earth to go and be king of like some new planet. It's fun. It's a fun film. I don't think it's great, but, it's a little bit goofier than you'd expect. And not in the way that the trailer presents. Like, the trailer kind of presents as, like, you're going to watch this dude die over and over again. Like, that's not what it is. But it's a good time, I think. And the performances are really good. It's just didn't quite hit as hard as I was wanting it to, but I liked it.
Sounds like completely aligned with what I've heard about it.
Yeah, I don't think I'm like far off with where people hit on that one. Another one I saw that same weekend is Novocaine, which is Jack Quaid in this. It's like an action comedy, I guess, where Jack Quaid plays this guy, Nate, who works for a bank. And he also has this, I think it's a real disorder as well, where he cannot feel pain. He doesn't know when shit like is going bad. So like, you know, everything has kind of been baby proofed for him. Like he has tennis balls on the side of his desk and he drives very slow, like, cause he doesn't want to get in a car accident, because if he does, he wouldn't actually know if he was hurt.
Might not realize he's got internal bleeding or something.
Yeah. Like, and he doesn't eat, like he mm-hmm. drinks everything because he might bite off his tongue. Like these are things that like they paint it out as like, he is this very conservative and because he has to be, he is very like protected, but he falls in love with this, teller that works at his bank. She kind of seduces him. They have a one night stand. I guess not one night, but the next day the bank gets robbed. They take her as a hostage, or so he thinks. And he decides, like, that's it. Like, I'm gonna save her. Like, he's like never had any sort of interaction in love. Like, so he just sets out on this quest to save her, and it gets his ass kicked along the way. Like, a lot of the funny stuff is in the trailers. Like there's in one of the trailers, there's this whole scene where, you know, he puts his hand in the frying, the oil, like, cause there's a gun in there, and pulls that out. Like, a lot of like the gory, it gets way gorier than that, but they show like the kind of idea behind it in the trailer. So I wasn't like surprised by everything, but, he's really good at it. He's really funny. It gets a little, it's a little cheesy towards the end, but, you know, for a little action comedy, it's a good time. And it's short. It's like only like an hour, 35 minutes or something like that. So, you know, well paced, quick in and out. Good watch.
Yeah, I'll for sure be checking it out when it hits streaming.
And the last one I'll talk about is the new Steven Soderbergh film, Black Bag. With Michael Fassbender, Kate Blanchett. I think they're the two big stars in it. Pierce Brosnan's also in it, and he plays a kind of like high up in this spy organization. Premise of it is Michael Fassbender and Kate Blanchett are married. They both are spies that work for this British organization. I don't know if it's MI6 or whatever, but Michael Fassbender's role is basically internal affairs, basically. Like, he investigates people within their own organization to track down moles. And he has given a list of like five people, one of which is his wife. So he brings all these five together, and he never kind of like suspects his wife, but it's not painted that way. Like, the way it's painted is he's just investigating everybody equally. Also like kind of spying behind his wife's back, and it's done really well. It's, I think that the story in it is really neat, like the way it plays out, and you don't know who it is until the very end. And it's kind of shocking the way it reveals. Cause like, you're actually kind of thinking she is the one, like, that's kind of how it's painted, is she's the one and he might be trying to cover it up. It plays out maybe a little bit differently. Pierce Brosnan has a point to play in that as the director of this organization. I thought it was really great. I was surprised to see people like going, "Oh, that was really boring." And I was looking for a spy action movie. No, it's not that. Like,
you saw people saying it was boring.
Yeah, there were people online that were like, I went to go see Black Bag, and like it was dull, and I was like, I could see where you get confused by it.
It's kind of, it's a people in the room movie, right? Like, it's people in the room talking to each other, which I guess I understand that's what it is. I don't know. It's funny that you say that, though, because the reaction to it was pretty fucking positive. Like, people are pretty, really, like, into this one. At least some of the people that I saw. You among them, I saw that you really liked it.
I was like, this, and that's like, it's short. It's like 90 minutes long. It tells a really intriguing story, and like the mystery is fascinating, and you start to see, you know, the way Fassbender is playing things. You start to see him picking at people and unraveling things and making them unravel to do other weird stuff, like to their partners, and it's just really, really, really well done. I had a blast with it. It was like, this was great. Like, it's not a big spy action movie. It's not Mission Impossible or James Bond. It's exactly what you said. It's just people in a room talking, or,
you know, building suspense out of that.
Yeah. Or him like watching things on like a screen from a satellite. Like it's stuff like that. It's really neat. It's dialogue being pitted against each other, and it's good stuff.
Yeah, most of the reaction I've seen is so positive that I might just blind buy it when it comes out. It's just, I didn't think anything of it because I'm like, Soderbergh has a new movie out every month, and I don't think I've seen a Soderbergh movie that I was like, oh my god, that was great. They're either like, oh, it's pretty good, or not for me. So it like sailed right by me, and then everyone's like, fucking Black Bag. I was like, holy shit. So I might just buy it when it comes out. I like that type of movie. So
cool. I hope you come away with it enjoying it, because I really liked it.
Based on everything that I've heard, I think I will. I love Fassbender too. Anything else you wanted to touch on?
No, I think that's it for now.
Chris, I got to see one of the biggest shows of the moment in the last week or so, and that is a show called Adolescence on Netflix. Have you heard anything about this?
I know it exists. It's popped up on social media a couple times. I know nothing about it, though.
Okay. It's Stephen Graham, who, I don't know if you know the actor. He's really good. I know him from Boardwalk Empire, Al Capone. He also shows up in The Irishman. He's a British actor. He's super talented, very good. And he co-created this show with some British TV creator who is very prolific, I guess. And what Adolescence is a four-part miniseries on Netflix. So it's a limited series. It's one and done. It is a crime drama. And the gimmick, if you want to call it a gimmick, is each episode is one. It's like a one take thing, one shot. And it's for like, so picture like the movie 1917, like that, where it's like all completely unbroken. It's the camera just kind of roaming around. But this is done for real. Like, there's no trickery, I guess. And, you know, on a technical level alone, that's pretty impressive. What is this show about? It is about a kid who he's like 13 years old, who's accused of killing a classmate. Stephen Graham plays his dad. And so like the first episode literally starts with the cops showing up to their house to arrest the boy. And the whole episode is just, again, an unbroken thing where, so you're following from the moment they show up at his house, him getting in the police car, going down the station, getting booked, processed, fingerprint, you know, all that shit. Mm-hmm. And the parents are just in bewilderment, like, what is going on? And, you know, and like, you know, a public defender coming in and talk to them. So like, that's what the first episode is. And each episode is kind of a different thing. I won't like spoil the show. But for instance, episode 2 is entirely the cops going questioning people. Mm-hmm. this got like rapturous reaction from critics and I think people as well. I saw I don't know how many critics calling this the best TV show of the year, and you know, one of the best TV shows of all time. And I think they came in a little hot on it, like they're puffing it up a little too much.
Okay.
It kind of like, you know, you're like going in expecting like the most important fucking thing, like in the greatest, you know, like a this groundbreaking new thing, and it is really well done, and it is very unique in what it does. And like, you know, there's only four episodes, and each one is like really different and really kind of comes at a different angle. I think that, again, I thought it's very well done. It's definitely worth checking out. I'm not telling people not to check it out. I'm just check your expectations, maybe, because if you're like me, it was like, I was like, holy shit, I gotta see this. And I did burn through it in 2 days, but again, it's only four episodes. I could do that to any show. And at the end, like, by the end of the fourth episode, you don't feel like you finished reading a book or like everything that came together. Like, I don't think it fully comes together. And just the show as a whole, and especially the fourth episode, it was like thoroughly depressing, dude. Like, I just kind of sat there after it was over, just be like, fuck, man. And so it's not like I'm giving a very cautious, like, yes, you should definitely check it out. It's definitely worth checking out, but like, I'm not going to tell you it's the best thing ever. And mostly, I think it's just going to bum you out. And what it's kind of going for, again, without like spoiling things, is how maybe social media is not good for kids.
Fair. Okay.
So that's Adolescence on Netflix. Again, just I found it to be like very well done and pretty depressing, but it's not like a rush out. You got to see this. There's no twists. There's no,
okay.
I guess there's one big twist at the end of the first episode, but other than that, but I'll go on to another TV show I've been watching, Chris, which I've already hit you up on, because I thought you would be all over this. There's a new show on HBO called The Pitt, which I think they wanted it to be a sequel to ER, but they couldn't get the rights or couldn't get permission to do so. It's starring Noah Wiley, who I guess is from ER.
Yep. Or I've never was, been, I guess, at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never been a medical drama, a network show person.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to like,
I never really watched TV. ER, so.
Yeah. But I know that you're watching, like, you're into like these network style shows. Like, I know you're watching like that Dr. Odyssey, right?
It's like the Doctor, yeah, I was. It's normally something like the, and it's probably why I didn't watch The Pitt. It's on HBO, so I assumed it was like more intense. Like, and like Dr. Odyssey is a show I can like watch while I'm working, okay, which isn't really like, I don't really have to pay attention.
You're leading me to my very first point here, which is, people are like celebrating a classic ass TV show. Like, this is a classic network TV show coming a comeback. And I think that people that like that type of show will instantly recognize things here that they like, and they will like this show. But I just,
okay,
I kind of disagree with that assessment. I think it's doing more. I think a characteristic of that type of show, like Law and Order, or I haven't watched Dr. Odyssey, but I imagine, is you could just watch an episode in random and get it. Like, and it's kind of a self-contained story. There are minor things, right, that like continue.
Yeah, there's a continuing storyline through them, but it's generally it's a mystery of the week procedural. Like, that's what they are.
This has elements of that, but I think there's too many things that it's doing different that I think, like, I would not recommend watching this show out of order, random episode, because what I think is a cool kind of innovation here is it's like ER meets 24. So the entire first season is one double shift at this hospital in Pittsburgh. So you start,
that's
like
kind of cool.
Yes. Yeah. So like episode 1 is 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. Episode 2 is 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. And because of that nature of it, you're going to have storylines set up in the first episode that continue for, because, you know, people are not in and out in 1 hour, right?
Right, yeah.
So you have, like, a brother and sister who are, like, middle-aged, who brings in their dad, who's very old, and he's, like, clearly just dying. And that goes on for, like, 7 episodes, dude. Like, and it's just, oh, man, it's heart-wrenching. Like, so the show is, like, every episode is very intense. Like you said, like you guessed, it's very intense, very fast, because there's a barrage of emergencies just showing up every few minutes. So you're talking like, you know, you say like your case of the week type thing, and you're talking like 6 cases every week. Yeah. And mm-hmm. But some of them will bleed over into later episodes. So like if you just came in and watched episode 7, there'd be certain things you'd be like, I have no idea like who these people are or what.
Yeah, there's like, because they came in at 7 a.m. and now it's, you know, 10 a.m. and
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
But the show is very high intensity all the time. The character stuff that you get about the people working there is kind of like worked in as like they're running down the hall or something. Like there's no real downtime or like we get a lot like, you know, you can see what they do outside of the hospital or anything like that. It's just go, 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 go. And it's very intense. And I'd say very entertaining and a very addicting show. I do think it also deals with COVID in an interesting way. It takes place now, but it kind of reminds us of like, we are a society that is still kind of like dealing with what COVID did to us. Right. Sure. And I think more so for people who are on the front lines of it. So the big thing, like the main character, Noah Wiley, he, you know, he gets flashbacks of, you know, they're all in the hazmat suits and shit. And he lost his mentor, the doctor that was above him died during COVID. And this day, the season takes place on the 4th anniversary of his mentor's death. So he's like kind of having a rough day to begin with.
Right.
But there's just like, so much going on that's just like a minor part of it. Like you get stuff like every episode where you're just like, that's another fun thing about like, I've never gotten into a medical show, but like what's fun about it is too, like you're constantly learning medical knowledge as you're watching it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that's a thing that could happen to you, or like, you know, this guy's got burns and his like insides are swelling, so we have to cut him pressure. There's like there's just like a million, like every episode you're gonna learn a million things like that. So it's fun on that level alone. And then also like some of the stuff is like seriously gory. Like it cracks me up. Like the beginning of each just episode
stuff
like,
you couldn't show on network TV. Right?
Oh yeah, like, and there's nudity and stuff that they're getting away with way more than you could on network TV. But it cracks me up though, because it'll be like, you know, at the beginning of the episode it'll be like TVMA. And you're like, okay. And then like in the episode, there'll be like a lady whose leg got hit by a train and the skin on her leg's been degloved and her the bone is split completely in two. And you're like, and they show it and you're like, TVMA smoking? Like that was it. Like you might have mentioned TVMA. Nudity, violence, gore, you know, like
yeah. Like the smoking is like it's almost like they're trolling with a
they really are. It'll be like, it's always one thing. It's like TVMA, language. And you're just like, all right, dude, yes, there was language, but there was like a million other things in here that are crazy. I think this show's incredible. I can't recommend it enough, man. Like I would, and it's the type of show I would recommend to anybody. Because if you're a person that's into network TV, you're going to get your kind of hook out of that. If you're into the more prestige, like HBO drama, I think it's doing things that does. I think all the characters are pretty like well written. I think Noah Wiley, again, I never watched ER. He's fantastic in it as the lead doctor here. And a lot of it feels like a very real portrayal of what it, you know, if you've been in an ER before, like so many things about it feel accurate. Anytime he gets the hospital administrator up his ass about like we want your customer satisfaction numbers to go up. He's like, yeah, well, maybe you need to fucking hire more people so we're not letting people wait for 6 hours to fucking see us, you know? I find the show to be supremely entertaining, incredibly well written and well made. And to catch up, because there's 12 episodes out so far, and it's going to be 15. So I'm going to be like caught up so I can watch the next episode, you know, live. I have a wild prediction, and I'll leave it at this for the show, though. In like the first or second episode, I think it might be episode 2. This like 16-year-old kid brings his mom in, and she's like sick. And you know, she's like vomiting. She doesn't know what it is. And finally, the doctor and her are alone at some point, and she's like, I made myself sick. I ate something to make myself sick because I'm worried about my son. He has a kill list of like girls he wants to kill. And though Wiley goes to talk with the kid, and he like runs out. And this is like many, many episodes ago now, but it's not like, I think 4 p.m. on the show for me. I'm like,
okay,
when are the fucking bodies going to start? Like, they set something up that I feel like it just seems too weird for it not to be followed up. Just like, there's going to be a mass shooting. They've already had the day from fucking hell. And I'm just like, it's going to get it's going to be like devastating in the home stretch. I do know this. I know because I saw people like a week or two ago being like, holy shit. You know, everyone's like, oh, the show's intense. And like Noah Wiley would be like interviews and stuff. Like, just wait, man. Like, once you get like to a certain point on the show, it like really kicks into high gear. And I guess it has, but I don't know. I'm avoiding whatever, but like what it is. But
yeah.
My prediction is the school shooter's coming back. So we'll follow up next time and see if I was right. But yeah, dude, I wouldn't recommend this to you as a background show while you're doing other things. Although I guess you could do that. It's just so gripping that I think it's worth the, you know, paying attention and watching it. Big recommend for me on this episode.
Okay. Yeah, it's one I was like, maybe I get to it. Like this sounds like something I would like. It's just, yeah, it's definitely not something that I think I can like put on in the corner while I'm working.
You could, but you're just gonna miss a ton, you know.
Yeah, like doesn't seem like the way to watch it.
But yeah, it's just, I guess its viewership has grown every week over 12 weeks. So
that's good.
It sounds like it's a we have a hit on our hands, and hey, chance for you to get in on the ground floor of a new hit. This has staying power, and I think it will get renewed.
Okay. Neat.
I'll leave out most of my other stuff. You know what? I want to touch on one little thing because it relates to something I talked about in the previous episode.
Mm-hmm.
Last month, I talked about a new movie called September 5, which was about ABC Sports at the 1972.
Yes.
I was interested enough in the subject that I followed it up by watching Steven Spielberg's movie, Munich. Have you ever seen it?
Mm-hmm.
You have seen it?
I believe I have. Okay. I don't remember a ton of it. I remember stuff from it.
Okay. To me, like watching it right after September 5, it almost plays like a sequel to September. The events of like the Munich hostage situation, they play out in like the first 5 minutes of this movie, and the whole rest of the movie is Israel's like quest for revenge to kill the masterminds behind, like, because the terrorists I think were killed that day along with all their hostages,
right?
But you know, Israel wanted to go after the masterminds, so they have Mossad agents going after them, you know, secretly tasked with killing all the people, like, you know, after Bin Laden. And
yeah, makes sense.
The movie is like, it's excellent, man. I think it's like I said, right after I watch it. I'm like, Spielberg, for me, it's like one of his most adult films. There's no sentimentality to it. It is set piece after set piece of dudes planning murders. Like we're going to plan in this guy's bed. When he lays down on the mattress, it's going to apply pressure to the, you know, switch, and it's going to fucking blow him up. And they do it. You see them walking after, and the dude's arm is hanging from a ceiling fan. I'm just like, geez, like, it's just so, just not what I expect from Spielberg. Like, it's, I mean, yes, he's done Saving Private Ryan, but there's just no, this is a very, like, adult thriller, no bullshit. And it builds to, like, this ending stuck with me ever since I've seen it. And I don't know if you remember the ending, but it kind of like it. I did not see the ending coming, and I was like, "Holy shot!" I must have hit pretty hard in 2005. But yeah, Munich is it's not available anymore. Rent or buy it. But if you've not seen Spielberg's Munich, it's awesome. A very good movie.
All right.
Yeah, I watched a lot of like older movies, and a lot of current TV, but we'll leave it at that because we got a couple of movies to talk about that I assigned. We're gonna find out if how you know if it was there. This was a good assignment or not, and we are going to start with Punishment Park.
Okay.
Under the provisions of Title II of the 1950 Internal Security Act, also known as the McCarran Act, the President of the United States of America is still authorized, without further approval by Congress, to determine an event of insurrection within the United States and to declare the existence of an internal security emergency.
Restrain the defendant!
The President is then authorized to apprehend and detain each person as to whom there is reasonable ground to believe probably will engage in certain future acts of sabotage.
How many children have you killed? Who's dying right now? Do you care?
Sent those kids out there, Nancy.
I sent those kids out there. Who's dying? Who's dead? It was sitting right here.
Oh, you fuckers! You fuckers! You shitty fuckers!
This is a movie written and directed by Peter Watkins. I don't know any of the other movies he's did. I looked at them. I'm like, I've not heard of these. This came out January 1st, 1971. Budget of $5,000. I don't have box office numbers on this. I imagine it's pretty low. I imagine this is like a pretty limited. This is a very early mockumentary style film.
Yeah.
And it is. Let me ask you this, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine a world where the United States government and the president, like, kind of misinterprets laws to take away free speech and to go after protesters and detain them and submit them to cruel punishment. Can you imagine a world like that?
Oh, you mean like today?
Ooh. It's a movie that, like, at the time may seem a little outlandish, or maybe, you know, hey, we're commenting on this bad. Like, in this film, it's very directly the Nixon administration.
Yes.
But, like, watching this movie, I'm like, we are 90% of the way here right now. And the things that happen in this movie, like, this feels like ripped from the headlines of today, which is just like so crazy to see this backslide. Like, this movie came out in 1971. They're like, this is the danger. This is like where we're headed to. And here we are.
54 years later, we're there. Like, they're, today they picked up a reporter editor here on a visa in Boston. She wrote she wrote an op-ed for the Boston University paper. Yeah. I don't even remember. I did not see what it was about, but yeah, like probably pro-Palestinian.
Yeah. Like, not, you know,
not I like think pro Hamas, which is what they keep painting these people. They say, as.
Yes, yes.
But like being, you know, hey, maybe we shouldn't, you know, wipe an entire group of people off the earth because that's bad. And oh no, yeah. you're pro terrorist. Like,
it's
no,
wild. It's but, dude. Like, it's sometimes because you're caught in it and you're like the frog in the boiling water.
Yeah.
You step back and look at it. This is a very dark moment in America. Like, really. And I don't give a fuck if anyone listening to this disagrees with that. It's, I don't give a fuck. Fuck you.
Well, we're a country that's supposed to be, you know, a big thing that even right-wingers have always said is like, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of speech.
It's kind of the thing about America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden it's like, hey, these people that are here legally, you're saying they're not allowed to speak freely. And also you're, you know, you're attacking law firms and judges for speaking out against you. Like,
it is by every measure exactly like all the things that the most alarmist people, including me, have been saying since 2016. Like, why we can't let this happen, and we're here. Sadly, not to go on a little political rant, but like, that's what this movie is. This movie is a political rant.
Yeah, pretty much so.
So the idea here is kind of like Steve. You ever read The Long Walk by Stephen King?
Yeah, love that book.
That's kind of what this is. Like, it's what we're doing. The president has declared a state based on the McCarran Internal Security Act of 1950, basically like calling like Vietnam War protesters insurrectionists. And so people who are like just kind of college students get swept up into this thing. They're facing like insane fucking jail times for things that they should not be in prison for whatsoever. It's free speech to protest the war, just like now. And they get put in these like not even real court like trials, like
there's fucking tribunals in a tent somewhere.
Yes, yes. And they're basically like, they give these protesters a chance. You could either serve your sentence, or you could participate in something called Punishment Park and avoid your prison sentence. So like nearly everybody is like, I'll take Punishment Park, right? Well, Punishment Park is basically a training for National Guard and police to hunt people.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what are the details of this? It's like, they get dropped in the middle of a desert somewhere, and they have to make it to this flag that I think they said is
50-some miles away.
Yeah, 53 miles away. Seems kind of impossible, right? They're kind of given an impossible task, right? It's like making your way 3 miles through the desert while we're going to hunt you.
Like, what's you that? Have a 3-day time limit too. Like, it's like you have to do this in 3 days, and also the cops start chasing you in 2 hours.
Yeah, so it starts at 10 a.m. The cops could start to pursue at noon. You have to get this flag. What other rules are we got? Halfway to the flag, there's supposed to be water.
Yep.
Which is crazy that they don't give them water at all. Like, you have to make it 25 miles to water in the desert. And then I think they say is...
this documentary crew like keeps like, oh, it's now 103 degrees out.
Yeah. So it's like almost like you're fighting against the odds to survive this park, you know, at all. But on top of it, 2 hours into it, the police start to pursue you. I think the rule just detain you unless you put up a fight, right? Like, if they catch you, they'll take you, and then you have to serve your sentence. Then you serve your prison. Like, if they, you have to serve your prison sentence, they won't, you know, use violence on you unless they have a reason to. And of course, this all falls apart. A lot of the movie, you know, it's just fake documentary footage, and the British narrators, like outside observers of what's happening in America, are like telling you all this information. I just, you know, all these rules and this and that, and you're watching footage of these people walking through the desert. I think it's a movie that hits pretty hard in terms of being a very strong political statement that does not mask. It doesn't make up a fake president. It's just like, yeah, Nixon is doing this, and imagine this is him keep going with what he's doing. But as a movie, if I'm being honest, I don't know if 100% works. It works. It's like an early example of a mockumentary, but like, it almost feels more like an essay or a poem about America than there's not a super strong narrative. It's just like these people trying to get through the desert for 90 minutes.
Interspersed with like the trials and the testimony at the trials.
And that's where you get your essay about, like, they show the protesters, like, kind of like saying what they have to say. You know, I guess I'll give an example. The one protester, he's like, America is as psychotic as it is powerful, and violence is the only thing that will get your attention. I thought that was an interesting line. You know, people be like, you're just going to throw away the Constitution and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
There are some developments, like early on, there is like a group that splits off who decide they're never going to let us win this thing. It's all bullshit. And we need to, like, our only way out of here is to fight. And that's what starts, like, I think they hurt a cop, right? Or I don't know if they hurt or kill a cop. I can't remember now. I saw this a few weeks ago.
So do you remember? I don't know. So I just watched this a couple of days ago, and I don't remember them killing a cop. Like, so, like, this cop ends up dead, or guardsman ends up dead, and maybe I missed it. Maybe I just looked away for a minute. Yeah. It's a long movie.
Yeah.
But the cops go, oh, like, you know, this guy, he was killed, and now we're out for blood. Like, they've decided they're going. So
maybe they accidentally killed one of their own. You know, it could have been one of those situations.
Yeah, because they're out there just shooting off guns and shit. And so, like, they got guns. You know, and maybe this guy, it's possible that one, like, we don't know, right? Because we don't have this, but maybe this guy was like, I don't know, this shit seems whack, man. Maybe we shouldn't be hunting people. Like, and you know, they killed their own dissenter. We don't know. Like, and again, maybe I missed something, but that was kind of how it felt. Is like, it seems like this murder happens to set it off, and I don't remember the people actually doing it. They do end up hurting another cop and stealing their gun and stealing the car, but that's later in the film.
Yeah, but yeah, that's kind of what the movie is. It's you're watching this like horrible thing in the desert that's going on. This like almost like horrible game show, and it's interspersed, like you said, with flashbacks to the people getting sentenced and going through their bullshit trials. It's just like cooks with, like, you know, anti-capitalist speeches and anti, like, government speeches and whatnot. There is a politician I remember in the tent that kind of looked like Marco Rubio to me, and he kind of acted like him, like a total kiss ass.
Mm-hmm.
There's a one of the Republican politicians. This is a line I thought was funny. There should have been more Spank and less Spock in America.
Yep.
The thing that strikes me watching this is, like, not only is, like, this shit still relevant, but, like, we have moved so much closer to what this is. Like, you know, I kind of said at the top, it's just like, we are, like, inches from this.
Yeah, you know, Watkins pegged this fucking 54 years ago. And we're like right on the cusp of it. Like, you know, maybe we're not having fucking the Hunger Games with the National Guard chasing you down out in the desert yet, but we're vanishing political dissenters. We're shipping people off with no due process to El Salvador prisons to do hard labor. Like, it's fucked, man. Like,
it's scary.
Like, it's
It really is. I guess there is an ending to this, which is like, even though they make it, the cops at this point are so riled up, they're waiting for them.
Like, yeah,
people that make it. And didn't matter because the whole, you know what? The whole game's fucking rigged.
Yeah, they drive to the end and have a fucking wall in front of this flag you're supposed to reach and they won't let them by.
I mean, I found the movie disturbing just because of how much I see in it that is just like not exaggeration. But I don't know. What do you think of Punishment Park?
So I think I'm kind of like right there with you. It's a haunting film. Like, it has a message that is just very, very kind of on point for today's society and for what's going on in America. But as a movie itself, like, I don't think it's great. It's short enough that I was like, yeah, this is entertaining enough. I don't think it's bad. It's not like, oh, this is like an all-time banger. It's just like the message behind it, what they're going for is the big draw of it. Like, it's what really hits.
Yeah. I'm not rushing out to see if this is in the Criterion Collection and I could get a 4K of it or something. I'm happy to have seen it because I do think it's a strong political statement and just a very early example of kind of a new genre in film. And I think it's worth checking out I think it's worth checking out if you're into anti-government movies. Like, it is as anti-government as it fucking gets. And, you know, I dig movies like that. Ever since I saw They Live or Roger and Me, I'm just like, fuck yeah, fuck the system. But this is like an apple. And, I'll give my score first. I think this is worth checking out. Like I said, if any of those things interest, and it's like sadly more relevant than when it came out, but you know, I can't go too hard on this. I give it like a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, that's right where I'm at. Like, I mean, it's watchable. I think you should watch it actually. I think the people that watch it, if you watch it, you're going to be, you know, one of two minds. You're either like, oh, that's absurd and that would never happen here. And there are those people that are seeing everything that's happening in America today and denying it. And then there's people like us going, oh, fuck. Like, we have maybe already stepped over this line.
I have a darker take than you. There's people that would watch this and be like, that's Biden.
Yeah, or
it makes no sense. It makes no sense, but they like, that's an interesting thing about like the anti-government movie. Like they live. You could, it was about Reagan, but if you're a right winger, you might watch that and go, yeah, that's about like they're trying to propagandize us with this fucking. We have to take the you know the vaccine. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's fucking crazy.
It's. Sadly, like, I think there's something to that.
I mean, I think there might be another contingent of people too, Jeff, that watch this and go, we should do this. Like, those people are also fucking weirdos and horrible people. And
not just sadly a contingent, but like, I think it's sadly a much higher part of the population than I ever would have imagined.
Yeah, I keep seeing, like, it's horrible, right? Like, and we've always had this where it's like, if you don't like it, leave. Like,
yes, yeah.
Like, but like, this is like to that whole, like, a whole new, well, fine. Like, if you don't like it, then we're gonna fucking punish you. Like,
yeah.
It just gives them an extra step to go through and make people's lives miserable. Yeah, it's a scary time.
Yeah.
It's a scary film.
So that's, you know, that's Punishment Park. I would say, like, again, worth checking out for sure.
Yeah.
Next up, we're going to talk about a much newer film I saw when it came out and really liked it because it was like a Netflix movie, just kind of disappeared. I don't think it deserves to disappear. I just think it deserves people to see. And that is called They Cloned Tyrone.
Everything okay in there, baby? I'm just an average man with an average life.
Where the money at?
I'm an entrepreneur. I work in the spirit of the pimp game.
You know your girl gotta know what's going on in these streets.
No, get up.
That's the car right there.
Shit, they gotta elevate this bitch.
Slick, come on.
That make your spider senses tingle.
What kind of shit is this?
Like I'm in the twilight zone.
Don't let the back door hit you.
We gotta go.
I don't know what that was, but that wasn't me.
Somebody is conducting experiments on us.
It's in fucking chicken.
This shit in everything.
Chicken crazy. Great try. Come the fuck out.
This our homeland. We don't do nothing about it. Nobody will.
Chill. Just fucking chill.
Shit.
What is this motherfucker doing?
Okay, we ain't got a time for no negativity. Go give me some goddamn wet nets. Something is pulling up.
You keep your pimp hand raised.
Watch out.
And be willing to protect the ones you love by any means necessary.
I ain't scared. I'm a dope boy, remember?
Excuse me, kind sir. But if you could pull me to the elevator that leads down to the Fiki Laboratory.
Don't let the back door on
you. I'll be out your atmosphere.
Let's get it, man.
We're on the scene trying to figure out what has happened.
I see this shit fucked up. They out here cloning this. What the fuck going on in this bitch?
That's right. That is the prevailing theory.
Tell me, is it just a dream?
As I said, it was a Netflix movie. It released on July 14th, 2023. No budget numbers. And, of course, no box office because it went straight to Netflix. They didn't do any sort of theatrical. This was written and directed by Jewel Taylor, who he was a writer on Creed 2.
Okay.
And this was his debut, like big debut film. And I found it to be very impressive for a debut film. This is like pretty ambitious, even though it's in some ways homage to stuff like They Live. If I recommended, like if I was at work and so I was telling someone to watch this, I'd be like, it is They Live meets Get Out. Do you think that's like too far off base?
Fair.
And
it's like a cross between them. Yeah, sure.
And also, I kind of feel like it has a little bit of the same vibe as some of you I really enjoyed a few years back called I'm Sorry to Bother You.
Yeah.
But this movie—it's kind of a lot, and this movie stars John Boyega. He's like the main character. I think his name is Fontaine.
Yep,
we got to pull up all their names. Jamie Foxx is Slick Charles, and Teyonna Paris as what the hell is her name in it?
Yo-Yo.
And. Good Lord, like, this is a tough one to tackle because this is like a full 2 hour movie.
Yeah.
And there's a lot going on. So basically, these are people, they live in a place called The Glen, which is kind of like a, you know, bad neighborhood, ghetto, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And Fontaine is a drug dealer. Slick Charles, Jamie Foxx, is a pimp. Teyonna Paris is a sex worker that works for the pimp. But our main character is John Boyega as like this drug dealer. He gets enough like a like, you know, he beats up some guy that owes him money. That guy belongs to a rival gang, and he ends up getting shot. But then he wakes up the next day, like in his apartment, like everything is back to normal. So obviously there's something going on here. These three kind of team up to figure, and this movie kind of gets crazier. It kind of starts off playing like a crime drama, like we're watching like Boys in the Hood, right? But quickly, yeah. Like after he gets shot, you're like, all right, something's going on, and it just kind of takes off, goes crazy, like clearly inspired by things like They Live and Get Out, and they discover like. They go to his house and find a fucking elevator that leads down to a lab. There's crazy shit going on in the lab. There's dudes that look like white, but they have afros. And it's just like, what is going on in this movie? They know something's going on because the elevator that goes down to this lab. Eventually, like... There's so much details in this. If you want to like stick on any details, just let me know, because there's this movie, like so much shit happens in it. I think when they go down in the lab initially, he sees his dead body on the table, doesn't he?
Yeah. He doesn't see it right at first, but he's like kind of like questioning the lab tech that's down there, and like he kind of like looks over and they see a corpse. They see somebody over there. John Boyega then like kind of walks over. Fontaine walks over and I don't know if he unzips it or, but he does see like, oh shit, like, because up until that point, he's not really buying in to what's going on. Like, you know, Slick Charles and Yo-Yo are like, yo man, like you were shot, like you were dead, and now you're fine. He's like, that makes no sense. Like, I feel fine. Like, I have no holes in me. And then he sees his dead body. He's like, what the fuck? Yeah, so at that point is when he kind of, like, realizes shit's weird.
There is... I think they go back to the house the next day. The elevator's gone. Like, it's just like...
Yeah. Fontaine goes in. He like, rounds up his boys and, like, they go,
what are you looking for?
They go in squad deep. Like, it's like four or five of them. And it's like, it's a really funny scene because it's like, buddy's like, hey, man, you probably just need to drink some water. Like, you get a little stressed out. If you just get some water, you'd be all right. It's like, I'm not crazy. Leaves them there. It's a funny scene.
There's a fun scene. They go to like this Friday, like advertise on TV a bunch. This is probably the most like They Live scene to me, I think. They're sitting there and they're eating their fried chicken, and Fontaine starts laughing, and Slick Charles is like, I ain't never seen you laugh, you know, like, and then they kind of notice that everybody's laughing.
Yeah. Like the entire restaurant's laughing.
And they think that it might be this powder that they found in the lab that they might be, like, using on the population.
Yeah, because when they were in that lab, Slick Charles, like, snorts it, thinking it's coke. But he's, like, starts laughing. Like, he starts laughing. I think Yo-Yo does some as well, and she's laughing, and they accidentally kill the lab tech. He realizes it in the chicken place.
And then they, like, Yo-Yo, like, kind of seduces the manager of the chicken place, who is another one of these white guys
with an afro.
And when she goes into the back office, like, she's, like, snooping around. She sees, like, there's, like, security cams in the back office, but it's not just the chicken place. It's all over town. Cams from the strip club and this and that. And then they determine, like, whatever this was, they're putting it into everything that is like popular with the black people in the neighborhood, like the hair cream, whatever, right? And this kind of sends them off on their adventure. Like, they find a government badge card, and they get led to a church, and that opens up a fucking secret thing in the altar in the church, and they're back in the lab again. And I'm watching this movie. I'm just like, I didn't know what to expect going in. I just like, oh, it's a Netflix movie. You usually don't expect too much from them. And I was just like, wow, this thing is like so inventive and so bonkers and so out there. Like, it keeps like layering on the shit that's going on.
It goes from like, oh, there's an underground lab to there's an underground city lab. Like,
yeah, citywide.
Under this entire city, neighborhood.
Kind of like Dark City.
Yeah.
Like, you ever see that? Where it's like the whole city was an experiment. That's kind of like that. This too is in here. Like, this movie has a lot of influences. So I'll just want to briefly touch on something that I really like too, watching it the second time. I think I liked this the first time too. Every character in this is a stereotype. Like, Fontaine is the drug dealer, comes off as a stereotype. Tiana Paris as a sex worker, she comes up as a stereotype. But as you get to know them, you realize that, like, yeah, these people are the people you see doing these things. They do these things, but they're actually people. Like, they have lives, they have grandmas, they have parents. I love that you find out Yo-Yo is like a huge Nancy Drew fan.
Mm-hmm.
It's just because the way sex workers are often written is like they're one dimensional, or they're like, it's like bad trauma in their past, which is usually have trauma, but they're also people. They might be a girl who really likes Nancy too, which is like,
right.
I really, really appreciate that about this movie there as the movie goes on, I think in a really cool way. Basically there's some sort of conspiracy happening, and I think on second viewing, I was just trying to keep up the first time watching this, and I was just kind of blown away by it. Second time, I kind of know what's going on, and I'm like, the conspiracy stuff, just like in my opinion, I'll ask you what you think in a second. Like, on second viewing, I thought it's like a little overstuffed. Like, it's like there's so many things going on. Because, yes, they are like using this powder to mind control people, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have this great part kind of halfway through where like Kiefer Sutherland shows up as like this enforcer for the government.
Yeah.
And he kind of gives the game away, like, what's going on? Like, yeah, we're doing mind control on you guys, and everyone has to like stay in their lane. Everyone has their part to keep society how we like.
Yeah, and he specifically calls out like, well, because, you know, our three main characters, he calls out like Fontaine and Slick Charles as being expensive, like implying that they are. I mean, we know that Fontaine's a clone, but also implying that Charles is a clone. And he kind of just, you know, Yo-Yo is like, you're a dime a dozen. Like, I don't, we can kill you. Like, so I don't know if like she's real or. Like, is she, like, you know, as you said, real people, but is she not a clone? Like, that they're just willing to expend her and they'd get another one off, you know, just because of the way we've set up society here.
Or less vital to, like, whatever they're, like, I don't know. Like,
they need Fontaine and so Charles to basically, you know, bring. You know, if you get rid of Fontaine and Slick Charles, then, like, you know, this sex crime in the neighborhood goes down. If you get rid of Fontaine, the drug crime in the neighborhood goes down. Like, you need them up because
she's more of a pawn.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, they're all actually pawns, but she's more of a pawn.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention, like, the scene leading up to Kiefer Sutherland, really great scene where they out of the lab and go up in an elevator and they're in like the strip club and you know, the DJ's in on whatever this government conspiracy is, and they tell him, you know, put on this, like, he puts on like a song that like tells everyone to chill out and like listen to, like, you know, doing mind control shit, and it turns like everyone into zombies. I thought that was really great. Trying to think. So then, eventually, like, I think after the part with Kiefer Sutherland, I'm doing this by memory now. I'm kind of like, I'm trying not to read my notes, but it's like Fontaine realizes that they're powerless. They're like rats in a fucking cage, like rats in a maze. Like, you know, we're just designed, like, you know, Kiefer Sutherland tells them, you guys have your roles and you have to play them. So, like, Fontaine kind of goes back to, like, I'm going to do my routine, I guess, right? Like, he gets up in the morning. It cracks me up. Every morning he gets up and goes to the liquor store and buys a 40, like, it's coffee for your morning. It's like a hoffle. Like, and basically, like, Fontaine falls into, like, hopelessness, right? Like, this is it. This is it for me. Like, my life is designed. Like, that's a big theme of this movie, and, like, Sutherland spells it out. It's like, you will never move above your station in life. Like, this is what you are, right? And so Fontaine accepts this for a while. But he goes check in on Slick Charles, and Slick Charles seems to be in a funk and in much the same way as him. And I think Jamie Foxx is actually very, very funny in this movie. Like,
hysterical.
Really great, like, kind of nuanced performance. But then it's funny. It's, like, comical. And I would say the same thing for Teyonna Parris. Like, in the same way, like, as the movie went on, I started to love her. She's just so likable. Like, she's the one among them that has heart and is telling them, we should fight. We should. I don't want to be always like this. We could break where we are. And that's, like, kind of, like, he goes to check in on Slick Charles, and it's like, where's all the hoes at? And he's like, well, I think he says that they have a spa day or something. And he's like, you know, I like to give him some time off. And I think he's kind of lying there. I think he just couldn't do it anymore. He's just like, oh, so I'm just programmed to do this? And that feels wrong.
Yeah.
And then they finally decide to, we're going to do something about it. It gets even more complicated from here. Like, this movie goes crazy. They go to look for Yo-Yo, but she's already being held captive in the lab, where, like, they also do experiments on people. That's what I'm saying. It's like, there's so many things. They do experiments on people. They do mind control. They're making clones. And then there's another recall that we find out near the end. It's kind of a lot. Like, it all kind of, like, sailed by the first time I'm watching it, because I'm just trying to get my bearings. And I was just like, wow, this movie's just, like, going places. How did you feel about, like, did you feel like it was, like, overwhelming, like, what the conspiracy theory was, or were you just along for the ride, or you don't feel about it? I think it's a little messy on second watch.
I mean, there's a lot going on. I kind of just all clumped it. I didn't go evil
government.
Yeah, I wasn't like, oh, you know, they're doing this conspiracy. Like, it's like, it all just kind of, like, ties together into this weird, you know, government thing going on underneath where they're experimenting on the people of this neighborhood. So, yeah, like, I only watched it the one time. I assume probably if I, you know, watch it again, or, like, oh, it doesn't move as quick, but I was having a good time with, you know, Jamie Foxx and Teyonna Parris, like,
and the constant surprise
hysterical on it. Yeah.
It was like, constantly, and, like,
going, like, oh, somewhere. Shit, that's wild. Like, oh, yeah. they have, like, keywords that they can say and, like, you know, force you to do shit. And, like, there's always something new that they're throwing into, you know, into the mix that, you know, keeps it fresh.
Yeah. So that's not, I mean, again, first time I watched it, I was kind of blown away. I'm like, I thought this movie was great. I give it 5 stars. And rewatching it, I'm rewatching it now to do a pod. I'm looking at it a little more critically, and I'm, you know, looking to poke holes in it a little bit. And, like, that was, like, the big thing for me. I'm like, this movie is both a little too long, I think. Like, it goes on and on, and, like, even at the, when you get the end credits, it doesn't end. It keeps going after the end credits. And, it, you know, it feels a little messy. I don't think that, like, it doesn't take away a lot from it. Like, I still really enjoy the movie. But if I was, like, gonna, like, say what I think are problems with it, it would be those things. They come up with this complicated plan that you don't realize that they're doing until it's like already halfway in it, where they're kind of like rounding up people, you know, they're rounding up the gangs and stuff to
basically storm the castle.
Storm the there is an awesome shot of them and all their Impalas and stuff going down the street and holding up the guns. And I remember the first time I watched it, that was like the moment I fell in love with the movie. I was just like, this is so great. Like, this is so fun. They're playing like this awesome fucking 70s, you know, funk and shit and rolling down the street. And it just reminded me of like Escape from New York. I don't remember. It's Escape from New York. There's a pimp in that that has like a totally dressed up fucking car with like a kid. It's like just like chandeliers hanging on it and shit. Like, I don't know. It just reminded me of that. It was just like this totally like fun, silly scene. And it's them rolling in to like take control and you know, take the power back or whatever. Like, kill these flab. I really like that was like the moment where I was just like, hell yeah. But like, in this whole sequence, Fontaine like goes to Isaac, the rival gang, you know, guy that killed him at the beginning of the movie, and then pays him to kill him again. And he gets dumped on the road, and then he, you know, gets put in the lab, and you're like, what the fuck is going on? And it was all set up. It was a thing that they had
planned it. He's like, you know, I need you to shoot me. Like,
superficial. Like, shoot me in the shoulder. And it was just to get him in the lab.
I need them to come collect me, and I'll pretend I'm dead.
And, you know, I guess could help.
That whole scene is pretty funny, too, the way they negotiate that. Where he's like, he runs up to the guy outside, is like a roll of money, and he like gets all in his face. It's like, you need to go talk to the buddy and, you know, tell him we need to meet. And he gives him the stack of money, and then he's walking away. He's like, you too. Like, and then, like, you see, like, there's this weird negotiation where the hookers are like, fake, like whacking them off or giving them fake blowjobs as they're passing information back and forth.
I do love about that. I think it's Slick Charles that says, like, you know, the way to play a fool is like you show them what they want to see, and that's all they're going to see. So, like, the guys in the lab watching the stuff in the lab, they're seeing what they want to see. They're seeing hookers do tricks, etc. Right? Like, drug dealer shot by another drug dealer. Business is normal. But it was to get Fontaine on the inside, so I guess he could like help them get in or whatever.
They're going to save Yo-Yo. Like, they know she's down there.
But that was like their way. Him getting shot was their way in initially. Although they didn't really need that because they walk into a convenience store. They're like, yo, I need you to take me to the freaky ass lab where this shit is going down. And he just stares at them for a second, and then one dude like just shoots the shotgun at the ceiling. He's like, all right, let's them in. And I just love how they're coming down the elevator, because like they can't all fit in the elevator, so they're coming down in groups. And so, like, as they're taking over the lab, and like, this part of the movie is so fun. All these fucking gang members running into the lab, fucking shit up, taking it over. One guy's like on the phone, like, yo, man, this is my new crib, man. This is where I'll be chilling. Come down here, man. It's just a very fun, like, they're like knocking dudes off of scooters and shit. It's fucking great. But then you have like the people trying to flee the lab, and every time they go to the elevator, there's another group of dudes coming down to fuck them up. Very fun. Like, this is kind of like the climax, and I think I don't know about you, I find the lab shit very fun.
Yeah, again, it's a good time.
Feels very like an homage to 80s like sci-fi and shit like that. Then we get to the end, and Fontaine gets in a fight with like one of his clones, who is like a enforcer, like bodyguard type. He gets dragged back to this office, and then they roll out like this old Fontaine. Like, this guy is like 60, 70 years old.
Yeah.
And he explains it all to the young version, and basically, like, you know, Boyega / Fontaine, he was the original, like, and he's running this fucking lab. And the idea is, again, I think it's the thing that Sutherland lays out, which is like, oh, we're, you know, we're doing mind control, we're doing population control, behavioral control, experimenting on these poor populations. But old Fontaine says he, like, I added an addendum to this research. And what is it? Basically that, like, he's getting the government to allow him further genetic research where he would try to eliminate any traits that make black people different, right?
Yeah, something like that. And it's all because, like, his little brother died.
Yeah, and that's really good, too. And that's, like, part of the clone's story, or our main character's story, is that his brother died. It's all made up memory, but again, this was so overstuffed with ideas. It's crazy. It's like a made up memory that the original Fontaine, the old Fontaine, this geneticist, he wanted every one of his replicas to have that as part of their character. And it, you know, the story was like his brother was murdered by police for, like, almost no reason. I can't even remember what it was. But it's kind of like, I have to change the system from the inside type idea, I think, right? Is what he's going for.
Yeah.
And he says, like, his idea is assimilation is better than annihilation. So what his goal is, he's like, even though we're, like, all people on the inside, we have to, like, eliminate anything from our DNA that makes us separate from one. And he's like, I think he admits, like, we can't get the hair quite yet. So that's why you have, like, the light-skinned dudes with the afros.
Yeah.
Boyega, you know, our regular main character, he uses the code word Olympia Black and orders the clone bodyguard to shoot old Fontaine. They let all the fucking clones out. It ends with, like, the naked clones running all over the Glen, which is pretty great.
Mass chaos. Yeah. The news is out there reporting on it.
And, you know, yeah, the news catches on the conspiracy. Like, could this be real? They're saying these are all clones. We get a final scene between Fontaine, Yo-Yo, and Slick Charles, where I think they decide to go to Memphis to liberate another city. And that's kind of the idea here is, like, hey, this is happening. These dudes are the ones that saved the Glen, and they know what's going on. They're going to go liberate other cities. And it kind of just, like, puts the credits. You know, 10 seconds into the credit, we get after credit scenes because this movie never knows when to stop. And you get to see, like, there's another Fontaine in, like, L.A., and he's watching all this shit on the news. And, hey, man, isn't that you? Like, they see Fontaine, you know, there's a million clones of Fontaine. Like, isn't that you, dude? And then we finally get the real credits. I hope that made any sense to anyone that didn't watch it. If you watched it, I'm sure we made some sort of sense. It's a movie that's, like, it's hard to explain what it all is. I think it is a very fun, like, sci-fi action, like, romp. Like, I don't know, yeah. Like, it feels
that's how I describe it.
Yeah, I feel like it's very derivative of, like, lots of other movies, but, like, boy, was I surprised by it. And gotta admire the spirit of this director, like, doing such an ambitious, again, even though it's derivative, it's very ambitious for a first time film to, like, put all, like, he, like, put everything he could to in one movie, if, like, that's the only movie he could make, and so far it is.
I'm gonna hit every note.
Yeah. God, I find it super entertaining. Like, I find a lot to really like about this. I noted my problems with it. On second, I don't think I had very problems. I was just like, wow, everyone needs to see this. Second viewing, I'm like, yeah, there's issues with it, but, like, I still kind of love it for what it is. But I'll give you the floor. Chris, they cloned Tyrone. Give us your take.
Yeah. She said kind of, like, it's just a really fun sci-fi romp. Just wanted to circle back real quick before I get my final thoughts on it. But there's one thing I don't think we talked about was Fontaine lives with his mom. Mm. And And he,
sorry, I skipped over this. This is a huge thing for me. I love this
part. He always knocks on the door and like, you know, hey mom, like you want something from the store? You want some food? Whatever. And she always has a response, but you never see her, and because she doesn't exist, it's just a speaker that they have that they float. And it's not just him either, because Tyrone in L.A. When he knocks, he does the same thing. He knocks on the door, asks for a mom. I think that's actually what triggers Fontaine to join up with Slick Charles and Yo-Yo and kind of fight back. It's because he's like, he kind of has a meltdown in front of it. Like, is she actually in there? Is she real? Like, because if she's real, I can play my part, right? I think that was kind of his. Yeah. And it's like, she's not real. Like, none of this is real.
This is what I get from like not reading my notes, because this was a huge scene for me. I love it. Did you see that coming, that there was something with the mom, or no?
I felt, you know, after you kind of like realize, it's like, you know, and there's like a bunch of it, right? There's a bunch of things that build up, and it's like, all right, yeah, that makes sense. Like, she's not real, because everything about him is kind of fake, because he's just a clone put in the Glen to do his drug dealing job. He never pays much mind to, you know, if his mom actually is there. He just goes through the motions of it. And once he actually commits to being an actual person, like, he melts down because she's fake. Like, it's a cool, really cool scene.
For me, like, the first time I saw the movie, I did not see it. Like, they did a lot of groundwork to like build up to this moment, but like, I just didn't see it coming. And when it did, I was like, oh, holy shit, this movie's awesome. Like, it was another thing that like sent it to the next level to me. This time watching it, the first time he knocks on the door, I'm like, oh yeah, wasn't that a thing? Like, his mom is not his mom. Like, something is going on in there. And, but as soon as I saw him knock on the door, I'm like, that's something. I'm like, that's a great setup. I'm like, wonder what Chris is gonna think, like, if he's gonna even notice that this is something. It's a fun thing. It's a real, and again, you're right, it is the moment that pushes him back into like, I need to fight.
Yeah. It's a really cool scene. Like, the whole concept too, just like,
yeah,
like Truman showing him, basically, right? Mm-hmm, like, it's like, we're doing this production. We don't need a mom. Like, he doesn't need a mom. He just needs the
mom. Yep. He just needs her to say something through the door. Yeah. Again, like, I'm kind of just impressed that this is the first thing this kid did. God damn, dude. I think it's a fun movie.
Yeah. Super fun. Enjoyed all the way through. A guy like John Boyega, I think he's really good in this, but I think you said earlier, like, it's Jamie Foxx at Toyota Paris. Like, they are fun. They are funny. They give great performances. Jamie Foxx is hysterical.
And they start to feel like, go ahead.
Like, Sick Charles is kind of like, he's a pimp, but he's also like, he's kind of this sniveling coward. Jamie Foxx plays it perfectly. He's so good.
They go from like stereotypes to like very sympathetic characters.
You
root for them, you know.
Yeah, and yeah, you want Yo-Yo to stop turning tricks and like go live her life elsewhere, and like the little touches, like you mentioned, like Nancy Drew. They keep playing that piece in, like, you know, like, well, what would Nancy Drew do in this situation? And she like pulls out like, you know, some reference from one of the books, and it's like, that's just a neat little touch that goes on there. It's really, really fun.
It goes against the grain of how like sex workers are written. Like, my dad fucking abused me and I was on the streets. Like, all that could be true of her, I don't know. But they also show she has a grand to go. She has interests outside of, you know what I mean? Like, it's very rare that they're written that way as human beings, which they are.
And she seems, just the way she's kind of written is like, you know, she's doing the sex work because she has to, but she doesn't want to do it forever. And she's just trying to escape. Like, she's just trying to get enough money together to leave.
Partially because she's stuck in a maze that is making her do that.
Yeah.
So I give you five. I think I see. Kind of gave you final word.
Yeah, it's really good, really fun film. Super enjoyable. And I'm gonna go 8 out of 10 here.
Yeah, for whatever fault on second viewing, there's part of me that admired it more on second viewing. Even like it went both ways. Like there's things I'm like, you could like rein it in or thought about more, like what the conspiracy was exactly, and this and that. But like at the end of the day, I found this to be like wildly fun and ambitious, and good job for first movie. Jeez. And should be seen by more people. It shouldn't be buried. Because again, once you're like 2-3 weeks out on Netflix, you're not in the top 10 anymore. Nobody cares. This thing's long forgotten, I think, by a lot of people, and it should not be. And I give the same score as you. I really liked it. It's 8 out of 10.
Awesome.
I guess, I did not do a poll, but clear winner of They Clone Tyrone, I think.
Yes.
I'd say Punisher Park is worth checking out. It's an interesting oddity.
Absolutely, especially now, if you're here in the U.S.
It applies. What are we doing next month, Chris?
All right, so we're not going government conspiracy. We're not going relevant to anything either. we're going for a pair of third feature films and franchises, and we're gonna watch Predators, which is the third Predator movie.
Yeah,
and Riddick, which is the third Riddick movie. It's the third Pitch Black film. So
what were the other two? I know one was Pitch Black.
Pitch Black was the first one, and then the Chronicles of Riddick was
okay.
Was the second one, and then that one kind of bombed. They tried to like blow it out, and Riddick is like, all right, we're going to go back to being more like an Aliens movie. So we're doing a pair of sci-fi alien movies that are the third in a franchise. Been wanting to watch some Pitch Black for a while. So
yeah, I think I've seen Pitch Black. I've seen Pitch Black, I think. Mm-hmm. And then I played Aid as Riddick, which was actually a really good Xbox game.
Yeah, yeah.
Back in the day. But I don't think I ever saw the movie. I didn't know that. I don't remember that there was a third one just called Riddick. Apparently all directed by the same guy.
David Twohy. Riddick is available on Amazon Prime, and Predators is on Hulu.
I saw Predators.
Easy to find for both.
I saw Predators. Don't remember it. I remember not hating it as much as some people. I also didn't hate. Remember that one, the Christmas themed one, like a few years back, called like The Predator. I think
that one was fine.
I didn't hate it either. I'm a sucker for Predator. So
that was Predator. Both of these are kind of Predators is it's more like. The Predator movies normally take place on Earth, right? Like where, Predator was Arnold in the jungle. Predator 2 was,
city, LA.
Yeah, I think. In the city. Yeah. The Predator, I also believe, you said Christmas time. And then Prey is like, Native American
era, and 1800s, 1700s
or something.
They better do sequels. But
Predators is a straight up, like, I mean, they're all sci-fi, but this is like a space sci-fi. Like, so it is a group of prisoners being dropped onto the Predator planet to be hunted. Nice. Adrian Brody, yes. Topher Grace, Walton Goggins, Lawrence Fishburne, like good cast.
It's such a dude, not even good. That's great. Like, I remembered Topher Grace, but I forgot Walton Goggins. I remember Adrian Brody, who just fucking won Best Actor again.
If I remember correctly, Walton Goggins plays like maybe the most like vile of the criminals here.
Sounds right. Sounds right.
Yeah. And Riddick, I don't remember much of it. I remember that it has Dave Bautista, Katie Sackhoff in it. But very similar kind of concept. The Riddick was a prisoner and they get stranded on a planet and they're hunted by these you know, alien creatures that
similar
in concept. Yeah. Space monster hunting shit. I don't know.
A pair of part threes coming with like prisoner, space monster bullshit. And
yeah,
I think it's gonna be a fun episode. So we'll be back next month with those. Thank you for listening and watch along with us.
Yes, thank you.